I got goosebumps on top of goosebumps right now.
And I want to give it all to you.
My nipples are hard. I am excited.
I'm right here for you.
Actually, my nipples got hard.
I know it's going to be good to you.
My nipples.
And I'll tell you why, baby.
Up my neck, the hair was standing up, got the shakes.
Do you want to tell her, or do you want me to?
We don't have to get in all the gory details.
My nipples got hard.
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered a streak.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
You fat! You haven't been beat up properly! Woo!
I will never think of Shane McMahon the same way again after that intro. This is episode 427 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, February 28th, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Got to talk about Audible. We are still offering listeners of this podcast a free trial for 30 days of the Audible service. Audibletrial.com/Solid Monster is our official URL. If you use that URL to sign up, you will get yourself one free audiobook of your choice. It could be any kind of book you want. You can keep it as long as you want to. It belongs to you. Even if you cancel before the 30 days are up, it won't be billed. You get to keep your book. So check it out, audibletrial.com/Solid Monster. They've been a big supporter of this podcast, so any support you can throw their way would be appreciated. And also, we have two new shirts up in our store on ProWrestlingTees.com. Go to ProWrestlingTees.com/SolidMonsterSoundsOff. You will find them in the store. They are both of the 1992 variety. I got to thank Lance for his help with the designs. One of them is the Solid Monster 1992 shirt in the same vein as Austin 316. The other one, and I give him a lot of credit for this, he was able to mimic the same font style that WWE used to use for the Royal Rumble back in the day for the 92 Rumble, as an example. And you can check that shirt out, too. It's, party like it's 1992. So both of those shirts are up in the store if you want to pick one or both of them up. Got all different kinds of sizes, and you can get the soft cotton. Costs a little bit extra, but I've gotten the soft cotton before, and I enjoy it. So I think you might, too. So definitely check that out. Buy a shirt. And also, if you want to make a PayPal donation, you can do so on thesolidmonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. Thank you very much to Russell the Muscle, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Malicious Intent Michael Cuomo, Out of Control Cody Thomas, James Hollywood Henderson, True Grit Tim Goggin, Guilty as Charged Mark Court, Crotch Chop Cody White, The Dark Serpent Derek Gibbs, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Jerome, You're Going Down, Eugenio, Rodney Hot Rod Cologne, The Chosen Son, Andre Smith, Dream Chaser, Chauncey Curry, Hard to Beat, Daniel Balenki, Julian Badstreet Blanc, Thomas the Promise Murphy, Fully Posable, Jeff Toon, who along with his brother Scott hosts the Fully Posable podcast, talking all things wrestling figures, from new figures to classic ones from the 80s, even the old LJNs. They talk about them all. They even have some great pictures up on their Twitter, at Fully Posable. Check out the show at fullyposable.podbean.com. It drops every Sunday on iTunes and Podbean. WWE Fastlane last Sunday. Twitter poll I put up. 2,800 votes. 84% thumbs down. 16% thumbs up. I went 6-1 in my predictions. I should have known better. The one I got wrong was the Wyatt family winning. I actually predicted they would win, right? What a dumbass I am. Of course they lost. I thought Jericho and Styles had a really good match. Main event as a match I thought was excellent. The finish, not so much. Predictable, but just very deflating. Again, predictable doesn't have to be bad, but in this case, it was pretty bad. They've got 4 weeks to get me interested in that match, but right now, all I'm interested right now in that main event is seeing what the crowd reaction is going to be like. And it ain't going to be pretty. As far as the rest of the show, It's basically 2 hours of Raw. I don't really have anything overly positive to say about it. And let me say this, you know, that Edge and Christian cutting edge peep show segment with New Day and the League of Nations, oh, it was so bad. It was so bad. Just a colossal waste of time. It wasn't funny. There was no payoff to it. I mean, I know they were out there just to promote their new show since it was debuting after the pay-per-view, but this sucked. Plain and simple. This sucked. I don't have a Roomba in my apartment, but if I did, I still don't think it would be able to suck as much as this segment did. How you have five guys that talented in the ring together at the same time and produce a segment that dull is quite the achievement, I have to say. At least if they would have debuted a new team during the segment, it would have served some purpose other than just to kill time. That's all this felt like. Hey, we got 15 minutes to kill. I was not a fan of that segment. I'm going to talk about the Edge and Christian show later. We'll save that for the end of the Raw review. Let's just get into Raw. That was the big story of the week, really. Raw was live from Detroit, Michigan. Raw Instapoll, 2,200 votes, 82% thumbs up, 18% thumbs down. That's night and day compared to the Fastlane poll I mentioned. Highlight of the night was the return of Shane McMahon. After a 7-year absence, he got a hero's welcome in Detroit. The reaction was just insane. This was on the level of one of those Hogan pops where he would just come back and milk the reaction for like 5 minutes straight. Shane didn't have to milk much here. I mean, these people were going crazy. Chants of holy shit and this is awesome. The guy's already more over than the current roster. He's been back 1 week. He interrupted the presentation of the Vincent J. McMahon Legacy of Excellence Award, which ended up going to Stephanie McMahon. I had predicted Triple H, so it went to his better half instead. Shane made reference to how Stephanie and Triple H have run the company into the ground. Specifically, he mentioned the stock tanking, the ratings dropping. He was shooting here. He was shooting left and right. Talked about the high rate of injured talent all under their watch. See, but I thought Vince said that ratings don't matter. How come he didn't speak up here? Come on, Shane. You're living in the Attitude Era. You're living in the past. Ratings, they don't matter. Shane told Stephanie that Vince got himself into some trouble many years ago, and Shane bailed him out of it. They came to an agreement. Even though Shane went off to do his own thing, he never lost his place in line. Vince admitted to Stephanie that it was true, and he asked her to go to the back. And Shane told Vince, I'm not back for money, I'm back for my legacy. He's fourth generation McMahon. He's got three boys now who would be fifth generation. It's kind of interesting, actually. He has three boys, and Stephanie has three girls. It's nice and symmetrical. He said he wants to get full control of Monday Night Raw. You know, maybe he'll do what Donald Trump did. He'll flip it back to Vince a week later for twice what he paid for it. Vince thought about it. He said, okay, you can have Raw on one condition. If you agree to have one match on one night, that night being WrestleMania, the match being against The Undertaker, inside Hell in a Cell. Which just sounds like something out of a fucking video game. If you were to choose two players at random, that's exactly what it sounds like. I feel like it would land on Shane McMahon and The Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match. But you know what? That's why I like it. I mean, let's be honest here. This WrestleMania card was shaping up to be a dud. And at least now there's some genuine intrigue. You know, will the match actually happen? Will Undertaker refuse the match unless Shane picks a surrogate? Will Shane stay beyond WrestleMania? Is he going to take over Raw? Is Undertaker going to let him win? Would he sacrifice a loss at WrestleMania for the good of the company? Is this all one giant swerve? You know, what's in the lockbox? That's the other thing Vince mentioned. If Shane loses, Vince gets whatever is in this lockbox that Shane is apparently holding over him. And then Vince told him he couldn't wait to get one last chance to give him a fucking beating. That's exactly the word he used. It's exactly what he said. They bleeped it, of course. It's good to be the boss. I do like to think, though, that whenever Vince loses his train of thought, because that's kind of what it seemed like here, he was going to say something, got flustered. I like to think that in real life, when he gets flustered like he did here, he just randomly drops an F-bomb out of frustration. So this was quite the segment. I loved it. I thought it was great. It went on forever. It was like 25 minutes, 30 minutes, but it felt like 10. It's been a long time since we've had a long opening segment like that didn't feel like it was taking forever. And it was just cool to see Shane. Now, one thing to keep in mind, and it may turn out to be absolutely nothing, but one of you guys pointed it out to me, and I thought it was worth mentioning. And I went back and I watched it, and he was right. When Vince issued this challenge to Shane, he never said anything about Shane having to win at WrestleMania. All he said was Shane had to agree to compete in a match at WrestleMania against The Undertaker. So we'll know for sure tomorrow night if they say Shane has to win. I mean, they got another 4 or 5 weeks now between now and WrestleMania, so if they start using the language win, then this was just nothing. But he definitely didn't say win on Raw. That might be something to keep an eye on. If they never actually use that word, Shane could go in there, he could lose. Undertaker could win, and Shane the next night could point out that little loophole to Vince, and he can end up taking over Raw anyway. I'm going to assume it was, if anything, it was probably just a flub on Vince's part. Maybe he was supposed to use the word win, and he didn't. It's happened a few times since Vince has been back on TV where he's flubbed a line or seemingly forgot to mention something that was very important, and then the announcers have to kind of clean it up for him after the fact. Even here, like I said, he got flustered, he dropped an F-bomb. I hardly think that was something he planned to do, so it could have just been on Vince. We'll know more tomorrow night. But I miss Shane. You know, he was the one McMahon that I never got tired of seeing. The match with Test at SummerSlam in 99, which I included in that top 8 countdown I did of my favorite WWE matches a few months ago. That's one that you need to add to your playlist. The match with Kurt Angle at the King of the Ring in 2001, the street fight they had, probably the best match that Shane ever had. And the street fight with Vince at WrestleMania 17. Those are my top 3 Shane McMahon matches if I had to rank them. Or just rank them in terms of picking the top 3. You know, this guy, for a guy that I don't believe ever had any sort of extended formal training at wrestling, I mean, this guy was the real deal. You know, he was very entertaining, more often than not. Even the feud with Big Show, he had a silly feud at one point in like 2000, I think, or 2001, with the Big Show. And all I remember from that feud, I do remember the match, Shane took an insane dive from 50 feet up the scaffolding. I do remember that, but in terms of the feud, I still have it stuck in my head when he would taunt Big Show on TV every week. He would go, which way did he go? Which way did Shane go? I still have that stuck in my head after all these years. He was great. And then you have the posse, too, the Mean Street Posse. They were great. We have to see the posse at WrestleMania. I mean, fuck Joey Abs. We just need Rodney and Pete Gass. Those were Shane's legitimate childhood friends. And they need to bring the two of them back. It's the only way to make it a fair fight against The Undertaker. He needs help from the posse. I will say, though, I was not a fan of the match that Shane had with Randy Orton. I think that might have been the last match he ever had. Or maybe one of the last matches. I seem to remember there being a match with Cody Rhodes, unless I'm just imagining that. But I wasn't a fan of the match with Orton. I don't think that Shane did Orton or Legacy any favors in that feud back in 09. I think that one is probably better off being forgotten. So the question is, what now? You know, where does this all lead? What's the plan? Well, I mean, we know Shane's already training. He's been posting videos on Twitter of him training with a Muay Thai coach. I did a column this week for SEScoops.com. I said I don't believe for a second that Shane is wrestling The Undertaker. I'm going to stand by that because I still think there's a chance John Cena heals up enough to take his place and they do the big Cena-Undertaker match that Vince wanted to do originally. You know, Undertaker's going to be on Raw tomorrow night. I'm thinking maybe he shows up, tells Vince to basically fuck off. You know, he's not going to do his dirty work for him. And for the good of Raw, John Cena eventually shows up. Or maybe Shane recruits him to fight on his behalf and The Undertaker takes the match. But I do admit, though, it does look like I could probably end up being wrong on this. And Shane's training like a madman, and they're really hyping this thing up, I think, to where it would almost be a disappointment now if Shane didn't wrestle. So he may well end up wrestling in the match. If he does, you know he's going to do something crazy. He's going to do something suicidal. It's a Hell in a Cell match. It's WrestleMania. It's his first match in 7 years, maybe his last match. There's a very good chance this guy is flying off the top of that cell, whether he jumps or whether he's thrown. You know, they'll set up a little crash pad, whatever they do. There's a very good chance we see him go flying off the top of that cell. I'll almost be shocked if he doesn't. Guy can't help himself. He has to climb from something high. You're in a cage. What else is he going to climb? I just hope he doesn't die doing it. I saw where Meltzer and the Observer said the chain is right now only scheduled to be back through WrestleMania. This whole thing came together about a month ago. Vince realized Cena's probably not going to be ready in time for WrestleMania, and he knew he needed a main event for the show, and so he approached Shane, and Shane heard him out, and they came up with this idea. Now, that doesn't mean that after the reaction that Shane got last Monday, that plans won't change, and he'll stick around a little bit longer. I think everybody was probably caught off guard by how, you know, well-received he was. It kind of blew everybody away. But if that's true, if what Meltzer says is true, and he's only back for a short time, that would seem to indicate that he's losing at WrestleMania. I hope not, because this authority nonsense needs to die. You know, I would much rather have Shane making sporadic appearances every now and then as the babyface owner of Raw than another year of 20-minute authority promos to open up every fucking show and Stephanie slapping the shit out of anything that moves. I think, you know, here's one way they could go with this, because right now there really is no incentive, if you think about it, for Undertaker to take the match. And you already have people thinking, well, maybe he'll throw the match, he'll lose on purpose, you know, just to get rid of the authority. Why not have Vince, tomorrow night, why not have Vince add a retirement stipulation for the Undertaker, where if he loses, or if he decides to throw the match at WrestleMania, he's done for good. You know, Vince can get up in his face and say, you know, you're useless to me. I have no use for you anymore. Brock Lesnar beat you. You're no longer undefeated at WrestleMania. You're no longer an attraction for me. If you don't do what I ask you to do, you're gone. That way, what you've now done, now you've created a story of what will the Undertaker do? You know, Shane could always win on his own, but I don't think anybody believes that he could win in a fair fight if we're looking at this, you know, like an actual competitive match, right? Nobody buys that. So what's Undertaker going to do? Will he beat Shane to keep his job, or is he going to sacrifice a 25-year career by laying down for the guy? Could he bring himself to lay down for somebody at WrestleMania? I mean, we could fantasy book this thing 5,000 different ways, all of which I'm sure would be more exciting than what they'll actually end up doing, if their track record is any indication. You know, I mean, look, how about the Bullet Club? Or the Balor Club, or whatever the hell they end up calling them. You know, Doc Gallows and Carl Anderson, I think they're going to be in the clear to debut on you know, the main roster or NXT in the next couple of weeks, if they aren't already. You could save them. They could debut at Mania. Balor joins them. They cost Undertaker the match. They help Shane win power on Raw, which probably turns them all heel, because I still think screwing over the Undertaker is enough of a sin to get you massively booed. I mean, Brock beat The Undertaker pretty much fair and square the last time they had a match. That's why people still love Brock. So, all of a sudden, these guys are now the new top faction on Raw. You know, you've got at least three new faces, four if you want to count Shane, on the TV show, which desperately needs some kind of a makeover. So this would be something different. And then, who knows, maybe it leads to an Undertaker against Demon Balor match at SummerSlam. I mean, there's a ton of different ideas you can come up with. The one that I originally pitched back in November on SoundUff 410, it's similar to what they're doing now. It's not quite the same, but it's similar enough. My idea was, Shane comes back, he confronts Triple H, not Vince. Because really, it's Triple H, if you think about it, that has taken his spot. Right? Triple H is the one who's being groomed to take over. Triple H is the one who, you know, is spearheading NXT. Shane's the one many years ago who, you know, let's buy UFC, let's buy Pride, let me run this, let me run the ECW brand. And every single time, Vince shot him down. I mean, that's legit. You know, Shane wanted to buy, you know, a couple of MMA organizations. He did want to run ECW. And every single time, he got shot down. So you're playing off reality here. All of a sudden, Triple H, who's not even related by blood, he's running NXT. You know, that could be Shane. So I think the real issue, if you want to play off real life, it's not so much between Vince and Shane. I mean, I guess there is an element to that feud, but I think the real feud here is between Shane and Triple H. That's what you want to play up. Triple H is the one who moved into the family, took his spot. Shane's back to take what he thinks is his. And it leads to a match at WrestleMania where Shane picks a representative. He could pick a big name from NXT, like a Sami Zayn or a Finn Balor, to wrestle Triple H's representative for control, and not just control of Raw, but control of the entire company. You know, like I said, make it Finn Balor, make it Sami Zayn. Either one, they've got the relationship with Triple H from NXT. Triple H has to convince them, or he tries to convince them, hey, you better do the right thing. Remember everything I've done for you, everything I've given you. And just like with Undertaker, it becomes a story now, a question of what will they do? What's more important to them, loyalty to Triple H or doing the right thing? I think that would have been a cool way to introduce somebody new in a big spot instead of having just Shane wrestling The Undertaker. And again, hopefully end the Authority storyline. To me, that's the ultimate goal here. Whatever happens, as long as the Authority is done, they give it a rest. Shit, you know what? If Shane does take over Raw and they keep the Authority around running SmackDown, that's kind of their brand or whatever you want to call it, fine. I don't watch SmackDown. I don't give a shit. Do whatever you want on SmackDown. You can bring back Vince Russo. Let him book SmackDown. I don't give a fuck. Doesn't matter to me. Now, on this subject of the brand split, wrote that down here. This is what I wanted to talk about also. There was a listing. Apparently, it was an errant listing because it's been changed on a Ticketmaster page for a WWE show. It might have been a Raw taping coming up in late May that said, you know, it was billed as Monday Night Raw versus WWE. And people got all excited. Ooh, this is a sign that the brand split is coming back. And then they changed it. But, you know, with the Shane storyline, maybe they are considering a brand split. You know, there's been rumors about it off and on for the last couple of years. And with the Shane thing, if Shane were to stick around longer, if Shane were to take control of Raw, it would give them a storyline opening to bring back the brand split. I think that would be an absolutely terrible idea. I am not a fan of the brand split, and I'm not saying that because, you know, like I've always hated the idea of it. Once upon a time, I thought it was cool. And then as time went on, WWE started to just, you know, continually betray the concept of what a brand split actually should be. If you have a true brand split, if your company, if your roster is big enough that you can divvy it up and you can have a Raw and you can have a SmackDown, I'm okay with the idea of having joint pay-per-views because I don't want to go back to the days of having only Raw brand shows and only SmackDown brand shows because those days sucked, okay? Maybe not the first year or two, but over time, especially the SmackDown side, that roster got so thin, you would have a SmackDown-only show. I mean, it was terrible. It was absolutely terrible. So I think for your big shows, you want to have the joint rosters. But, you know, in every other way, if you were going to have a brand split, you need to keep them separate. You need to keep them separate. You can't mix and match and have a Raw guy against a SmackDown guy. You need to build that shit up until one day at a show like WrestleMania, or if you want to create a network-only show once a year where Raw guys battle SmackDown guys, bring back the War Games match, have Team Raw versus Team SmackDown, whatever you want to do, that's fine. I'm cool with that. But look at what they were doing the last several years of the brand split before they finally gave up on it. You know, for a while, they had a Raw versus SmackDown at Bragging Rights. Remember the Bragging Rights show? And they had the Bragging Rights Cup. Oof, oof, well, what a great trophy prize that was, right? About a week later, they forgot all about it. It didn't mean anything. Nothing was ever treated like it was really special. It never felt like a war. So if you're not going to do a brand split the right way, if you're going to neglect one brand in favor of Raw, because Raw's your baby, and so SmackDown suffers, or if you're going to mix and match, what the fuck is the point of even having a brand split? Now, you know, they split the belts, right? For years, I was saying, merge them back, merge them back. Finally, they did. You're not going to find me calling for them to split the titles again just because you can give Bray Wyatt a consolation prize. Okay? You've got one world champion, that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. The thing with me is I just don't trust that they would do the brand split the right way. It's a nice, cool idea in theory, but they'll never do it right. They'll fuck it up. Just like they always do. And there's two really big reasons why now is the absolute worst time for a brand split. Number one, you've got so many guys on the injured list. I mean, I've run through the list before, and you're going to get some of those guys back in the next few months. Some of them may never come back. You know, Bryan's done. Tyson Kidd probably is done. You know, but eventually they'll get back Cena. They're going to get back Orton soon. Sting's probably done. Cesaro. I know there's a few guys I'm missing. So they'll come back. But, you know, more guys are going to get hurt, right? This has been a problem for a while now. So the injuries have just ravaged them. That's number one. Now, you could always bring NXT guys up. I hear people suggesting that. Well, they could just promote a bunch of NXT guys. Again, a nice idea in theory, but I don't see them bringing up this mass exodus of NXT. I mean, do you really think one team or two or three NXT guys is going to be enough? They're not going to gut NXT and take half the freaking roster and move them up to Raw and SmackDown. They can't afford to do that. I do think that a couple of guys are going to get the call up soon. You know, Kaz and Enzo, I don't know why they're not already on TV. Maybe they're saving them for the night after WrestleMania. Samoa Joe's another one. I could see him coming up the night after WrestleMania. And that'll be good. You know, that'll be good. It'll get some fresh blood on TV. But, you know, if you're going to call up NXT guys to replace all the guys that are injured and to get some new faces, you got to call a whole bunch of people up. But the biggest reason of all is, and I talked about this in the SC Scoops column that I did, you've got Monday Night Raw, which is a 3-hour show. 3 hours. Wasn't like that during the brand split last time. So if they insist on doing this, if this is true, if this turns out to be accurate and they end up doing a brand split, the one move they have to make, they must move Raw back to 2 hours. I know they make money on the third hour. Maybe it's not even their call. Maybe it's USA. Maybe USA would be like, no, we like the third hour. We're not going to get rid of it. But you've got to try. You've got to get rid of that third hour. You can't have a brand split where Raw is 3 hours and SmackDown is 2 hours. That doesn't even make any sense. But the bigger reason is if you split the brands, right? If you split the roster in half, you're gutting the roster. You still have 3 hours to fill on Monday nights. And it goes back to what I just said. You're really going to bring up enough NXT guys to make up that deficit? You're going to call up half the NXT roster to make up the deficit for all the guys who you lost who are now on SmackDown? I don't think so. You've still got 3 hours to fill every Monday night, and you're going to take the current roster and split them in half. That makes absolutely no sense. You know, and I see a lot of people are very excited. I love the brand split. I loved it. I just don't think this is the right time for it. Talk to me in a year. Talk to me in 6 months. Talk to me down the road. Maybe I'll feel differently. If they did that right now, I just think it's a horrible idea. And then when it fails again, now you'll have two world titles again on the show, one of which is going to be defended like a secondary belt in the opening segment on Raw every week. Oh yeah, I'm in a real rush to go back to those days. So we'll see with this whole lockbox thing with Shane, if that goes anywhere, if we find out what's in the lockbox. You know, maybe it's love letters to Dixie Carter. Who the hell knows? I will make one prediction. Remember that poll they put up on WWE.com a while back asking who the fans wanted to see as a guest on the Stone Cold podcast? You remember who ran away with that poll? Shane McMahon. Pretty good bet we're going to see him on that podcast pretty soon. There were other things that happened on this show, believe it or not. They showed us footage that was taped earlier in the day of Brock Lesnar attacking Dean Ambrose in the parking garage when he got to the arena. I thought that was cool. They broke that on Twitter. It was like a fan cam. Fans were, I guess, waiting for the wrestlers to come in. Or, you know, WWE employees masquerading as fans. But I thought it was cool. It was something you don't see them do very often. Ambrose then, in the middle of the show when Brock is out there with Heyman, drives back to the building in the ambulance. Apparently he stole the ambulance. I believe that would be Grand Theft Auto. Still wearing a neck brace from the attack earlier, and he was crawling back to the ring. I thought that was goofy. I mean, I know we've seen stuff like that a million times before, but this just came off really goofy for what should not be a goofy storyline. Anything with Brock should not be goofy. Dean, you know, he didn't really get laid out. He was already laying on the ground. Brock literally stepped over him on his way out. Dean grabbed the mic, called him back, and said, "I challenge you to a no-holds-barred street fight at WrestleMania." Brock came down, gave Ambrose an F5 on the floor. Fans chanted one more time, "Oops." Don't think that was the reaction they were going for. Heyman then accepted the challenge. I like the match a lot. I really do. And in fact, before they announced it on TV, the next morning on Twitter after the Fastlane show, I even tweeted, I said, you know, if they do Ambrose and Lesnar at the pay-per-view, you know, coming up at WrestleMania, I think that would be a great idea, and I think it should be a street fight, and that's exactly what we have now. So I got what I wanted. It's a big match for Dean Ambrose. I know he hasn't been winning too much lately. I know he was the Intercontinental Champion for a while, but it just felt like he couldn't win the big one. Every time he had a big match, he would always lose. The question is, I guess, what do? So you have a guy who has been losing more than he's been winning, probably. Does he go over on Brock? Do you have Brock just beat him? I mean, I look at this match in a lot of ways like the Brock Lesnar CM Punk match. You know, the fact that Lesnar is so much bigger than Ambrose doesn't bother me at all. Anybody who thinks this, I can't buy into this match or it's going to be a bad match, Go back to SummerSlam in 2013. Watch that match. Watch Brock Lesnar and CM Punk. They had what I thought was the match of the year. It was a kick-ass match. It might have been a street. It might have also had street fight rules because I know there were chairs and weapons involved. It was a great fucking match. It was the match of the year in this company. And I think that these two could have a similar kind of match. I think you needed to put that stipulation in there. You know, Ambrose, you know, in storyline, it may be the only way he can beat Brock is by using a weapon. So, to me, as long as he doesn't duct tape his feet together or some lame finish like that, if he beats Brock, great. It would be a huge win for Ambrose, maybe the biggest win of his career. I would not be bothered at all if Brock lost the match, provided that he was sufficiently beaten down. Otherwise, go at it, man. Go at it. They should have made it false count anywhere. That would have made it even better. They could brawl all over the frickin' stadium. So I love the match. I love this match a hell of a lot more than I was loving the idea of Brock Lesnar and Bray Wyatt. I could tell you that much. I'm very, very, very happy they changed this match to what it now is. Speaking of the Wyatt family, they beat Ryback, Kane, and Big Show in the rematch nobody asked for. I don't even think people wanted to see the first match, let alone the second one. And this was another example of classic even Steven booking. At the pay-per-view the night before, the babyfaces win for no apparent reason. The next night, the Wyatt family wins. They get their win back. And the only reason they won was because Ryback bailed on his partners. He walked out on Kane and Big Show during the match, which I guess turns him heel or starts a heel turn. But that's the only reason the Wyatt family won, is because Ryback walked out. Otherwise, they probably would have been on their way to another loss, because that's what they do. They lose. Somebody sent me a funny meme on Twitter. I don't know who created it, but it was a picture of Bray Wyatt, and it was, I don't even remember now the whole thing, but it was something to the effect of say something spooky, you know, lose, repeat. It's the same formula with Bray Wyatt over and over again, you know, He can speak well, we know that. I mean, a lot of times he doesn't really have much to really say in his promos, and they get kind of boring. But, you know, he speaks well, he's into the character, he plays the character well. You know, I just think back to when he had that match with Daniel Bryan at the Royal Rumble 2 years ago. They had a great match, and Bray won. He actually beat a big name clean all by himself. This is a guy who, if he got a couple of big wins under his belt, I mean, we're going back to 2014, right? Okay, so he beat Bryan at the Rumble. And then what did he do? He wrestled John Cena at WrestleMania. And we all know what happened there. Now imagine if he would have beaten John Cena. I'm sure Cena probably would have ended up getting his win back at some point. They feuded for 3 months or whatever it was. But a big win for him at WrestleMania, you know, that would have been a big deal for Bray Wyatt. If they would have booked him a little more, you know, a little smarter, instead of using him as a punching bag, in a way, and thinking, well, maybe the character is strong enough or the Wyatt family is over enough that he can withstand a couple of losses. The problem is, as you lose and you lose and you lose, at some point people look at you as a loser. And I think that's where Bray Wyatt is. Now, the one thing they could do to fix that, to me, it's the only thing they could do at this point to fix that, is, and I think it's inevitable, whether it's the entire family or just Bray, probably just Bray would be better, but he's going to turn babyface at some point. And sometimes for a heel, that could be the kiss of death. But I think for Bray, people still like him, depending on how they do it and if they keep the family with him or not. I mean, there's a few different ways you can go with it. But I think once he turns babyface, a lot of these losses are forgotten. And then it becomes very important for them to keep him strong. If he turns babyface and he starts winning all of his matches, and he's kind of this lone wolf type character. I know Baron Corbin is the lone wolf on NXT, but if that's how they play up Bray, he could be salvaged. It's not like he's beyond repair, you know, cut him and let him go somewhere else. But to me, that's one of the few things you could do to rehab this guy. I don't know what else you'd do with this family at this point. Luke Harper's a talented guy. Eric Rowan, I have no use for. Braun Strowman, you know, could go either way. Maybe he turns into a good wrestler. Right now, he's just, you know, another big guy on the roster, but I'm willing to give him a chance. And that's it. I mean, that's the Wyatt family in a nutshell right there. There really isn't much more to say. These guys have been so abused over and over and over again in the span of just 2 years. 2 years. You go back 3 years to when they were feuding with the Shield. It really wasn't that long ago. And it's amazing how far these guys have fallen. I don't use the word bury a lot because I think that's one of the most overused words in wrestling. this guy was buried. Oh, he lost one match. He's buried. Chris Jericho, you know, he would constantly tweet and retweet people on Twitter and call them morons because he beat AJ Styles in one match, and all of a sudden, you buried AJ. It's like, no, he didn't, you fucking moron. That's not, he buried AJ. Why? Because he won one match? It's such an overused word, but I think here it applies. I mean, how can you not say that through this booking in the last 6 months, 12 months, that the Wyatt family has not been buried beneath the earth? And maybe they didn't intend to. Maybe they love all those guys and they really want them to get over. But guess what? What they're doing, it ain't working. These guys have been buried beneath the earth. I don't care. I really don't care. I'm at the point now where it just doesn't matter to me what they do. If they win, great. If they lose, I don't care. I'm indifferent towards the Wyatt family. That's a good word for it. That's it. I got nothing else to say about them, and that sucks. That's a shame, because at one time I was a big fan of this group, but now I couldn't care less. So, good job, WWE. Speaking of Jericho, he invited AJ Styles out to congratulate him on his win at Fastlane. He says he proved that he has what it takes to be the WWE champion one day, except the height. He didn't say that, but you know that's what Vince McMahon was probably sitting backstage thinking. He said Styles was indeed phenomenal, and then he shook his hand. Social Outcast came out to interrupt, and it led to a tag team match that Jericho and Styles won. Adam Rose referred to the Jericho-Styles team as Y2AJ, which it looks like maybe the name that they use going forward as a tag team. I'm not buying any of this for a second. Some of you in the Facebook group were all bent out of shape because you think it's a waste of AJ Styles if he's in some meaningless tag team match at WrestleMania. I don't think they are a tag team. I mean, I guess technically right now they are, but you know, I don't think this Y2AJ thing is lasting more than a few weeks. I think Jericho is turning on him before then. It's probably going to be Jericho against Styles again at WrestleMania. It just seems obvious to me that this is where this thing is headed. Anybody who's followed wrestling for any length of time, anybody who's followed Chris Jericho's character for any length of time, having him out there saying, hey, you're the man, you beat me, you're going to be champion one day, you're phenomenal, you're this, you're that, it doesn't seem right to me. Doesn't seem right. If you followed that Jericho character for any length of time, you can see what's coming. So I wouldn't get too bent out of shape about anything just yet. I would let this thing play out. On SmackDown, Jericho saved Styles. He took Kofi's Trouble in Paradise to the face. Busted up his eye pretty good. What a great partner he is, right? Yeah, until he stabs him in the back. Just wait. They announced The Godfather going into the WWE Hall of Fame. One of the funniest things I saw all night was the graphic. They've only announced two names so far, but they have this Hall of Fame graphic, and it's literally just Sting. And think about what he's done in his career. And there's The Godfather. It's like, what a Hall of Fame class this is so far. Whatever. I have no problem with Godfather going in. You know, the Hall of Fame is what it is. Again, this is not a Hall of Fame that's based on any sort of specific criteria. Godfather was a very popular character at a time when the product was never hotter. I think he benefits from that. You're going to see a lot of those Attitude Era guys who aren't in. They're going to go in eventually. You know, the New Age Outlaws are going to go in. Are they in already, actually? I don't think they are. But, you know, they're going to go in. And don't be surprised to see guys like, you know, Val Venus go in or Al Snow if he ever leaves TNA. You know, bring Head with him to the Hall of Fame. A lot of those guys are going to benefit from how popular the product was at the time. If wrestling was in the shitter in 99 the way it was, you know, in like 92 or something, and I love 92, but you know, business was pretty much in the shitter at that point, or 94, you know, then I don't know that you'd be seeing a lot of those guys going into the Hall of Fame. You know, Godfather's not going into the Hall of Fame as Papa Shango. You know, there's a reason for that. He's not going in there as Kama Mustafa. He's going in there as the Godfather. Just like Rikishi. Rikishi went in there as Rikishi. He didn't go in there as Fatu, as a head shrinker, as the man who can make a difference, you know, who was pretty much a job guy in 95, he went in as Rikishi at a time when the product was insanely popular. And so Godfather was as popular as any of them. Roman Reigns and Sheamus were in the main event. Whatever progress they made with Roman Reigns and the fans when they brought Vince McMahon back, they started cheering Roman more. Well, all of that progress has been completely undone. He was booed again, just like he was the night before. Michael Cole made a comment later on that it's going to be a long 40 days until WrestleMania for Roman Reigns, and he's not kidding. If you look at the Raw schedule over the next several weeks, I think they're in Nashville this week, but you've got Chicago coming up, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, Brooklyn, all on the list. It's going to be a long 40 days for Roman Reigns, and it's only going to continue after he wins that championship. It's not like when he wins the big one at WrestleMania, all of a sudden everybody's going to like him, and they're going to embrace him. What they have on their hands is John Cena 2.0. That's what they wanted, right? That's what they wanted him to be. Until they cut the nursery rhyme shit out, at least they had enough sense to do that, but that he was well on his way to being the next John Cena. He was cutting John Cena promos. He was booked like John Cena. He would never lose. The guy is Superman. He's got the fucking Superman punch. That's what they wanted. They wanted John Cena 2.0. I thought that was a huge mistake. I think a lot of the people listening to this podcast knew that was a huge mistake. And so now you have what you have. Now you have what you have. Because they know better than we do. Always remember that. They know better than you do. You just don't know it. Meanwhile, what they're going to do, what they're already doing, is they're ruining this poor guy. I don't have a problem with Roman Reigns. I like Roman Reigns. But there's a reason that, you know, they're in the situation they're in now. It's not like the people haven't been reacting to him like this for the last year, year and a half. You think they would have woken up by now. But nope, we've got our plans. He's going to be our guy. Again, it goes back to that whole thing of the guy. We need the guy. One guy. Well, you got your guy. You got your guy who's going to be booed to Kingdom Come every single week. Now, Steve Austin has enough sense. He knows the score. He was on his podcast. He said that he thinks in order for Roman Reigns to get over as a babyface, they got to turn him heel first. And I agree. And I think it makes sense for when Seth Rollins comes back. You know that when Rollins comes back, he's going to get cheered. You know, Reigns could turn at WrestleMania itself. Most of the challengers, I mean, look at the challengers after he wins the championship that he's going to have to go up against. Because I'm sure the Triple H thing is a one-and-done type of thing. He's going to need new opponents after WrestleMania. Look at who they have. They're basically all babyfaces. I mean, you can do Roman Reigns against Bray Wyatt. A, we've seen it before. And B, Bray Wyatt is a job guy at this point. You can do Roman Reigns against Sheamus again? I don't think so. Roman Reigns against Alberto Del Rio? Good luck with that. Rusev? No, thank you. No, what do you have? You have John Cena. You've got Dean Ambrose, possibly Brock Lesnar. By the time Rollins comes back, he'll be a babyface. You got all babyfaces. You could set up a big SummerSlam match between Reigns and Rollins. So I'm with Austin on this one. You know, there's still time to pull the trigger. If it's not already in their plans, you got another 4 or 5 weeks until WrestleMania. You could turn him then and there. That's a heel turn, unlike the Austin one. He knows a thing or two about heel turns that probably shouldn't have happened at WrestleMania. Didn't quite work out with Austin. But I think with Reigns, it could be the best thing that ever happened to him. This guy doesn't have to be John Cena 2.0 getting, you know, half cheers and half boos or 75% boos in every city for the next 10 years. I mean, can you imagine if Vince McMahon did not have Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels in 1997, and he was just hell-bent, he saw Rocky Maivia, he saw dollar signs in this kid, and he was hell-bent on taking smiling babyface Rocky Maivia and making him the guy. He's going to be our new top babyface, and he just absolutely refused, no matter how hard a guy like a Jim Ross or a Jim Cornette at the time or a Russo or whoever might have been arguing, hey, we gotta take this kid heel. Vince just insisted, nope, we got to keep him babyface. Would Rock be as big as he turned out to be if he was never given the chance to tell the fans to shove it? I mean, he's probably talented enough. Eventually he would have, you know, become a big star, but who knows? We don't know. I mean, just imagine that. Just imagine if he was as stubborn 20 years ago, 30 years ago, with those guys as he is today. He's only gotten more stubborn, it seems like, in his old age. But back to the match. We had Reigns and Sheamus, right? Great main event. Had no winner because Triple H came out. Not the suit-wearing COO Triple H. This was the jeans-wearing time-to-play-the-game Triple H. The two of them brawled. He hit Roman with the ring bell, and then he smashed his face repeatedly into the announce desk over and over again. This got Yes chant, by the way. The camera work here was absolutely unbearable. Up and down, up and down, up and down. Every time he would ram Roman's face into the table. Up and down, up and down. I'm going to have to start watching this show with a bucket next to me. As if the quality of the show itself doesn't force me to grab a bucket. Now the camera work will. So then he started beating the shit out of Roman Reigns. People are cheering this. Roman starts to bleed. I saw the fan video. I'm sure a lot, everybody has seen it by now. This fan video online, they were sitting behind the announcers. You could see Byron Saxton seemingly handing something off to Roman Reigns, and then Reigns does something with it. It looks like he put something in his mouth. I don't think it was a blade that he used. It was probably a blood packet or a blood capsule. He broke it in his mouth. I'm totally fine with that. I have no problem with that. You know, the blood, I think, really added to the whole thing. And if they're more open to the idea of blood, if it's not real, if it's safer for these guys, it's fine with me. I have no problem with it. Just because it may not be real, you know, doesn't make it any less effective. Although I do wonder one thing. They said Reigns underwent surgery on his nose for a deviated septum, which is legit. He really did have surgery on Tuesday, I think it was. Apparently he's had a deviated septum for a while. They shot this angle so he can go have it taken care of. Maybe he was having breathing problems and they just couldn't wait anymore. But I remember Jerry Lawler. I don't know how many of you guys remember this, but Jerry Lawler has said in the past that he has a deviated septum as well. And when he was suspended above the ring in a cage, there was a match on Raw many years ago between Bret Hart and the Big Red Dentist. Lawler's up there, he suffered a nosebleed for, you know, comedic effect because he was so high in the air. Now, he's talked about that. He said to get the blood, it was real blood, all he had to do was stick his finger up his nose and push on it, push on the inside of his nose, and he was able to draw blood. Now, this is different because that was a little nosebleed. This was a ridiculous amount of blood that we saw with Roman Reigns. I mean, he looked like he was murdered. But there's always the chance, you know, maybe it was real. And he was able to push on his nose and draw blood. You know, and then it got smeared on his nose and his mouth and it looked worse than it really was. Probably unlikely, but when I heard deviated septum, I immediately thought of the Jerry Lawler story. That's why I bring it up. Look, they matched this guy up with Triple H, figuring that Triple H, he's the one guy the fans would probably boo and cheer Roman against because Triple H, I mean, come on, it's the authority he so hated. Not realizing, you know, this is also NXT Triple H. This is also Triple H from the Attitude Era, who's always going to have people cheering for him because we don't have too many Attitude Era guys left. Triple H still has that cool factor, right? He's got that coolness to him. Of course, there's always going to be some people who cheer him. When he came out of the Royal Rumble, I was there. The place went nuts for him. So it's not like they didn't know that this might happen. But in their heads, maybe they thought, well, you know, Triple H, he's the most hated guy. I mean, surely they'll cheer Roman Reigns against him. Well, so far it ain't working. Triple H gave him a pedigree on the ring steps. He mocked Roman's Superman punch pose, gave him a crotch chop. I mean, Triple H came off like the coolest motherfucker in the world here. He knew exactly what he was doing. Yeah, you know, I mean, look, I guess sometimes you just got to go with it. The fans were already cheering him, but this did not do Roman Reigns any favors at all. The guy needs all the help he can get. This did not do him any favors at all. They've got to turn this thing around soon because if they don't, it's going to be WrestleMania 18 all over again. Or WrestleMania 25 for Triple H, where he gets shown up by a match earlier on the card. It's happened twice to him now at WrestleMania, where he's gone in there in the main event to a dead crowd. And the people end up being completely indifferent to his match in the main event. This keeps up, what I would do, you know, it's still early, we'll see as the matches are built up, but hey, I'm more interested in Undertaker and Shane McMahon and Hell in a Cell. If it were up to me, I would swap this and the Hell in a Cell match and put that one on as the main event. Because that's the match that all of a sudden people care about. That's the match where the stakes are high. The WWE title is suddenly taking a back seat to Shane McMahon and The Undertaker. I'm a believer that the title match should always go on last, except when it shouldn't. And this may be the one time where it shouldn't, because it's clear that people do not want to see Roman Reigns walk out as the WWE champion. And I don't see there being any other outcome to that match. I know they want the big celebration that he was deprived of last year. They want the pyro, maybe some confetti. I get that. But sometimes, you know, look, shit happens. And you have to adjust on the go, just like they did with WrestleMania a few years ago with Daniel Bryan. Believe me, that was not their plan. But they adjusted, and guess what? It was the right move to make. Even though Bryan got hurt, it was the right move to make. So, it's not too late. Shuffle things around a little bit. Probably do those guys a lot of favors by putting them on earlier in the show. Edge and Christian, real quick here. They have their new show, the Edge and Christian Show, that totally reeks of awesomeness. On the network, I watched the first two episodes. It's very scattershot, and some of the comedy I just didn't find funny. But I thought the first episode was worth it alone just for the segment with the Shockmaster. They found Fred Ottman himself, the guy himself, Tugboat. They found him. They interviewed him. He had the bedazzled Shockmaster helmet with him. They gave him a chance to redeem himself. You know, it was a total comedy segment, but I thought it was cool. Nothing memorable really happened on the second show. I do like, they do this little thing called the Chump Stain Challenge. You know, anything trivia, geeky like that, I'm a big fan of, so I like that segment. You know, I'll keep watching. They just had Bailey up at Titan Tower to film a segment for the show. Sean Mooney was back at Titan Tower. Yes, I follow Sean Mooney on Twitter. He is a news anchor now out in Arizona. So they flew him across the country to come to Titan Tower. He was the he was the backstage interviewer in WWE. I would say, I think he goes back to 87. So it would be 87 to like 93, I think he was in the company. Bobby Heenan would make fun of him all the time on Primetime Wrestling. It was very funny. There's a picture of him that he posted online with Edge and Christian, Mean Gene Okerlund, Tommy Dreamer, and Pete Gass. Yes, Pete Gass. That gives me hope for a posse reunion at WrestleMania. So anyway, those guys will be on an upcoming episode. Sean Mooney and Pete Gass. That's enough to keep me watching.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT, this was the third taping we had to sit through at the CFE Arena, and the crowd sounded every bit as dead here as it did live. We were just tired by that point. You know, we had seen no less than three Blake and Murphy entrances by this point. We saw the Drifter two or three times. It was too much. You know, Jordan and Gable came out, they still got a nice reaction, but it was nothing like when they first walked out. They got the win here over Blake and Murphy with their finish. Gable is just great. Jordan has the best hot tag in the company right now. It used to be Daniel Bryan, then it was Seth Rollins, but, you know, shit happens. Now it's Jason Jordan. He's got some scary strength, the way he throws people around in there. Him and Gable both, I think, are going to be big-time single stars. They have a lot of potential as single stars after they run their course as a tag team, which hopefully won't be for a very, very long time. And I got a tweet from SE Scoops before I started recording here telling me, I guess in some Q&A that Kurt Angle did, he was asked about Jordan and Gable. He said he would love to, like, come in and mentor them or manage them, you know, maybe reunite Team Angle with them in there, you know, in the old Shelton Benjamin, Charlie Haas role. I'm not a fan of the idea just because I think there are already a lot of people who are making that comparison to Haas and Benjamin, and these guys are great on their own. You know, I don't want these guys to be like, oh, you're just, you know, knockoffs of Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. No, these guys might be better than Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas, you know, after a couple more years. You know, they can stand on their own. I don't think they need Kurt Angle. If Kurt was just going to be, you know, like a manager for them or something like that, I guess that could be cool, but it's not necessary. I mean, these guys are over on their own. They come up to the main roster or you know, go down, I should say, to the main roster. You never know what's going to happen, right? I mean, I have little faith in that main roster. I have a lot of faith in NXT, not so much in the main roster, but I think these guys are good enough, and I'm sure Vince probably looks at somebody like Jason Jordan, you know, as big as he is, with the big pecs and everything else, and he's probably salivating all over himself. I think these guys are going to do well for themselves. I'm more interested in a Kurt Angle, Chad Gable match, right? That's what I would love to see. I know Angle's not what he used to be. You know, he's a lot older, he's beat up, but I still think you put him in there with a Chad Gable, you're like a motivated Kurt Angle. You see, a lot of those TNA guys, when they left TNA and they came back to WWE, or if they came to WWE for the first time, like a Samoa Joe, all of a sudden, these guys, they look like they have a new lease on life, right? They look so motivated. They're in there. They look as good as they have in years. If Kurt Angle came back to WWE and he was physically okay and he was motivated, you put him in the ring with Chad Gable, you could take my money. That's a match I'd love to see. William Regal announced the 2 out of 3 falls match for next week between Sami Zayn and Samoa Joe to finally, hopefully, once and for all, determine a number one contender to the NXT title. He also said a major new talent would debut on the show next week. I think you all know who that is, but I won't spoil it if you don't. Biff Busick of PWG and Evolve fame made his NXT debut here under his real name, which is Christopher Gerard. He wrestled Apollo Crews. Gerard got more offense in this match than Crews did. You know, when he first walked out, I will admit, you know, I've seen Biff Busick a few times. It didn't hit me at first who it was. I was also there, so, you know, it was a little hard to see at first who it was. I thought it was some job guy coming out. You know, he was moving around all weird and shit. And then I saw Crews, and I said, all right, this is a jobber match. But no, I mean, he took it to him, and he had Apollo in a chin lock at one point that had to go for at least 3 or 4 minutes straight. Apollo just couldn't do anything with the guy. And then finally, out of nowhere, Crews hits his tossing powerbomb for the pin. I have no idea what they're doing with Apollo Crews, but I've said it before and I'll say it again. Wrestling fans are inherently unhappy. We complain about everything, right? Isn't that what people say? Wrestling fans, that all they do is bitch and moan about everything? Oh, they buried the Wyatt family, and then the Wyatt family finally beats down a big name like Brock Lesnar. Oh, they shouldn't be beating somebody down like Brock. What the hell are they doing? We're all like that. So what do you think is going to eventually happen if this guy keeps coming out here smiling the way he does? I've talked about the smiling before. I'm not saying he should have a sourpuss on his face every single week, but he comes out, he's smiling, he's got no direction. So the only thing he does is he comes out and he smiles. He's always smiling. He's always so happy. Why shouldn't he be miserable just like the rest of us? Tone down the smiling. Ratchet up the ass kicking. Otherwise turn the guy heel, because this smiling ain't going to do him any favors. They showed us security camera footage of Dash and Dawson attacking Enzo Amore in the parking lot at Full Sail. Colin Cassidy came to his rescue. Things got broken up at that point. That makes the second parking lot attack on a WWE star this week. Kind of unsafe work environment in that company. Tommaso Ciampa beat Bull Dempsey in a loser leaves town match. They didn't announce it that way, but that's basically what it turned out to be. Ciampa won with an armbar for the submission. He then did jumping jacks after the match to mock Dempsey. Talk about rubbing salt in the wound. Bayley and Carmella against Eva Marie and Nia Jax. Eva is still an absolutely terrible professional wrestler, but she does get a ton of heat. You know what else gets a ton of heat? A cat that hasn't been spayed. Cat probably would be more graceful in the ring than Eva is. Bayley had it won with the belly to Bayley. Nia dragged her out of the ring. Carmella tagged in, ended up getting laid out by 3 leg drops from Nia Jax. Eva made the blind tag to Nia on the last one, snuck in, stole the pin. Fans were not happy about that. This was the worst NXT main event that I have seen in a very long time. Show ended with William Regal backstage with Finn Balor. Next week, Balor is going to take on the longest reigning NXT champion, Neville, who makes his return to relevance. I mean NXT. Remember that shot of Dixie Carter humping Hulk Hogan's leg, begging him not to leave TNA? I imagine that'll be Neville and Regal after next week, only Neville will be begging to stay. You know? That's how I envision it. So that was NXT. Not the best of shows. That's actually a great segue into TNA. There are sale rumors popping up again. John Gaborik actually gave comment to Mike Johnson at PW Insider, so there is smoke to the fire. He did admit that they're seeking outside investors and that Dixie Carter has been spotted in New York and LA in recent weeks having meetings with different people, possibly talking to a group out of the UK, talking to another group of potential investors here domestically. So there are things going on behind the scenes in TNA. I don't know that they are outright have a for sale sign on them, but this goes back to, you know, many, many months ago when there was a debate, are they for sale? Are they not for sale? What does that mean? Do they have to come right out and explicitly say that we're for sale, you know, in order for them to actually be for sale? I think if the right person came along, or the right group came along and offered money, that they would buy TNA. TNA is always for sale if there's a good offer to be made. And we'll see what happens. I mean, again, I look at TNA and, you know, ratings for the last show down 23%. That's just over 1 week. 210,000 viewers. Their lowest viewership maybe ever. I mean, certainly in many years. And this was for not just any old Impact show. This was a special lockdown episode of Impact. They had Matt Hardy defending the world title in the main event against EC3. I mean, that's a huge drop-off. That's a terrible number. And Impact was doing well for a while. You know, they moved over to Pop TV, and it looked like their audience was growing a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more each week. And they have just taken a huge step back. There's no buzz. There's no buzz. It's a dead brand. That's why I think selling to an investor is the best thing possible. You've got to get the Carters away from this. Just get them away. Fresh start. Change the name. Change the look. Change the announcers. Change everything about it. It's basically like starting up a new wrestling promotion, except you own a lot of the copyrights, if you want to keep some of the names, if you want to keep some of the guys under contract. That's the only thing I can see, you know, that would give TNA a shot of actually, you know, growing and creating a buzz. Because right now there's nothing. It's just dead. The initials, the TNA name, it's poisoned. There's no rehabbing it. There's nothing they could do. There's no creative idea they could come up with. There's nobody they could sign, short of John Cena, who is going to make a difference in this company. There's just no way. Selling is the only thing I think that could give life to TNA, because right now they're a walking, rotting corpse. You know, I haven't watched a full episode of Impact. I really haven't watched any of Impact in many, many months. You know, I gave them a second and third shot, and they blew it, and I gave up on them, and that's it. I'm done. And you got to know that there's a lot of diehard fans. I mean, just look at the numbers, right? The one thing they always had was that hardcore base. Well, the hardcore fans will always be there. Well, guess what? Some of them, they're going away. They've seen enough. When you start to lose those people, not good. That's not a good sign. So somebody like me, you know, I've given them plenty of opportunities, and I'm done with them. I'm not the one they need to be worrying about. But as more and more people, you know, are picked off here, you know, you can send these guys out there and have great matches every week. I'm sure they are. I'm sure there's some great wrestling on Impact. Well, I can get my great wrestling on Lucha Underground. You know, I can get my great wrestling on Ring of Honor or NXT or even Raw some weeks. They'll have a great main event. TNA has to have something more than just good wrestling matches to bring to the table here, because there's already so much shit out there. I mean, look at all the shows I review on this podcast every week. You know, what does TNA bring to the table? What is so special about the TNA product right now? I can tell you it's not their announcing. Last I heard the announcers, it sure as hell ain't that. They give that Raw announce team a run for their money. So what is it? What is it about Impact? You know, they have some talented guys, right? I think Drew Galloway is still around. You know, EC3. I'm a big fan of EC3. I would love for EC3 to leave TNA and go somewhere else. I feel sorry for somebody like him. He's in the prime of his career right now. He could be making some money. He could be a big name somewhere. He's never going to be a big name, like a really, really big name, as long as he's in TNA. And I know TNA gave him his big break. WWE fucked him over, let him go, didn't see anything in him. TNA picked him up. TNA's the one that really kept him strong. And maybe he feels a debt of gratitude to TNA. But you know what? At some point, you got to look out for yourself. Loyalty will only get you so far, believe me. You've got to look out for number one. That's a good lesson in life, by the way. And a guy like EC3, he should be doing a hell of a lot better than he is now. So for his sake, hopefully he can get out of there at some point, because I just don't see any hope for TNA as long as the same people are running the show. Ring of Honor, I did not have a chance to see the episode, the full episode. I started watching the beginning of it. I saw Roderick Strong was in the opening match defending the TV title. This was the go-home show to the pay-per-view. So I didn't see the full show, but I did see the new set, the screens, the lighting. It looks so much better. It really does. I got a good thumbs up to them on that. It looks a lot better than it did just a few weeks ago. So kudos to them on that. I didn't see the 14th anniversary pay-per-view on Friday night either, but you know, the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega six-man tag, from what I heard, was great. People are raving about that. I finally had a chance to watch the Kenny Omega-Hiroshi Tanahashi match a few weeks ago where Omega won the Intercontinental title. How come nobody told me that he sang a Katy Perry song in his post-match promo? I finally watched this, and he's on the mic. I don't think anybody even understood what he was saying, because a lot of the people there, I would imagine, probably don't speak English. They weren't reacting. He was saying things in English, and they weren't reacting. That's all. That's the only reason I say that, not because I'm a freaking racist or anything, but, you know, I leave that for Noah. Racist Noah. Remember that? Tyrone the Trombone. Must I remind everybody about that? One of the low points in this show. But, you know, he's on the microphone, and he's, you know, he starts singing Teenage Dream, and I'm like, this fucking guy is unbelievable. So anyway, Lucha Underground, this was episode 5. I thought the show was okay. Nothing terribly exciting this week. Jack Evans pinned PJ Black. Drago came down, accidentally spit mist in PJ Black's eyes, which led to the finish. 0-2 for Mr. Black here so far in Lucha Underground. Famous B is back. I remember he got his arm broken by Pentagon Jr. last season. We haven't seen him since. Here they did a mock used car salesman commercial with him. He said he'll turn you from a jobber to a robber, and he'll make you famous. I thought this was amusing. King Cuerno beat Killshot with the thrill of the hunt. Went for a package pile driver type move on him. He was trying to impress Mil Muertes. And before he can kill Killshot after the match, Phoenix ran down, made the save. Tejano against Chavo Guerrero and the crew in a gauntlet match. Matt Stryker. Let me talk about Matt Stryker here. Matt Stryker has his good moments, and he has his bad moments. One minute he's fine, the next minute he makes you cringe. Here, he said one of the single dumbest things that I have ever heard out of his mouth. And that's really saying something, okay? Think about that. Chavo Guerrero is on offense, and Stryker just goes, at one time, Chavo Guerrero was pound for pound one of the best wrestlers in the world. To which even Vampiro couldn't help but to ask him, what the hell are you talking about? Those are his exact words. Chavo wasn't even the best in his own company. Pick one. Pick any company you want to. WCW, WWE, TNA, Lucha Underground. What a stupid fucking thing to say. And I'm glad Vampiro called him out on it. So Tejano went to suplex him back into the ring. Cortez Castro was outside. He used Tejano's own bull rope to hold Tejano's foot down without the referee seeing it, and Chavo got the pin. And let me just say this, all right, because I've made comments about Chavo Guerrero before. I don't hate him. I don't hate Chavo Guerrero. I just think he is so overrated. He is so overrated by people sometimes. Like when he went to TNA, I have no problem when you hire a new guy, you want to make him out to feel special and all that. This guy came in, the things they were saying about him on commentary, you would think he was the fucking WWE champion at WrestleMania. And you gotta know that most of the people watching TNA, the ones they actually have left who are watching their show, these are hardcore, long-time, diehard fans, probably watch WWE too. They know the score. They know Chavo was nothing more than a, you know, like a lower card guy, especially toward the end of his run in WWE. I mean, who are you trying to fool? You know, come on. I mean, people aren't stupid. Got to have some credibility here if you're going to talk about this guy. So, remember the guys that were in the car that pulled over Black Lotus a few weeks ago? They said they were looking for the temple. They heard about this place called the Temple. Does it actually exist? Do you know where it is? And she guided them to this abandoned warehouse somewhere thinking it was the temple. But in reality, it was feeding time for Matanza. Well, we're back there. We can hear the screams coming from inside the warehouse. Black Lotus is waiting outside. Dario Cueto is waiting outside. And we learn a little bit more about Dario's family history. Apparently their mother used to hurt Dario and Matanza until one day Dario stood up to his mom. He wasn't tough enough, though, and before his mother could use a hot iron on him, or maybe she did, she may have used a hot iron on this poor kid, Matanza saved him by grabbing... there's a statue, if you remember season one in Dario's office, there was a red bull statue sitting on his desk. Sometimes he would hold it and stroke it. So I guess that's a family heirloom. It goes back many, many years. And a young Matanza grabbed the bull statue, and he proceeded to beat the mother to death with it. Over and over and over again, he beat her until she died. A little disturbing, but Dario said, it's not a bad memory, it's a happy memory. Because he learned that day just how much he enjoyed violence. I like it when they fill in the gaps. Yeah, I know they have three comic books out, Lucha Underground comic books. I just realized that you can download the digital version. I guess it's only in digital right now. It's not like a hard copy. But I went into iBooks on my iPhone. You could download them for free. So I got all three of them on my phone. And from what I've heard, they help fill in some of the gaps in these stories. They fill in some of the backstories with some of the characters. So I'm not much of a comic book reader, but I'm actually looking forward to going back and taking a look at some of that stuff. That sounds kind of cool. Back inside the temple, Pentagon demands a match with Prince Puma, which he is granted, but not after he first tries to break Katrina's arm. Katrina is an actual demon, though, I guess, and so she was able to teleport herself to another place before Pentagon could break her arm, and she tells Pentagon that you just made the biggest mistake of your life. Johnny Mundo and They Call Him Cage was our main event. We got the debut of Taya Valkyrie here. I first saw Taya on Lance Storm's show. Lance Storm had a reality show called World of Hurt. You probably never heard of it. I guarantee most of you never saw it because at the time it aired on some obscure men's network in Canada, I think called The Cave or something. If we have any Canadian fans, maybe you could tell me more about The Cave, if The Cave is even a thing anymore. But no, it's like a channel nobody had. But people were uploading the episodes online, and so I watched the first, like, three or four shows, and it was completely cheesy, it was completely contrived, like any reality show. This one maybe more so. But I watched them, and that's how I first became familiar with her, and then unfortunately they stopped uploading the episodes, and so I couldn't see the rest of the show. But I know she was trained by Lance Storm, she's been wrestling for AAA for a couple of years now. She's been doing very well down there, she's made a name for herself. She ran down, she had a lead pipe or a wrench or something, she handed it to Johnny Mundo, he whacked Cage in the head with it, got the pin, and then the two of them beat up Cage after the match. It's interesting that, you know, on the Ultima Lucha finale last year, Melina debuted, and she was making out with Johnny Mundo, it looked like they were going to put the two of them together as an item, and then there was a report that she was being very difficult to work with, and basically got fired, and was dropped in favor of Taya Valkyrie for the role. And I think Melina refuted the story and claimed that she had only agreed to make one appearance. Look, I don't know. It sure seems to me like this role was intended for her, and instead they just found another woman to replace her, because this would have been Melina. And it's not Melina. It's somebody else. So Johnny Mundo has himself a new valet. Show ended with King Cuerno in Katrina's office. He laid down the Gift of the Gods title on her desk and said, I'm giving you the 1 week notice. Which is, with this title, you've got to give 1 week notice. And he said, I want a shot at Mil Muertes and his Lucha Underground title next week. Katrina refused. She said, too bad. And instead, Cuerno is going to have to defend his Gift of the Gods championship on the next show against Phoenix in a ladder match. Phoenix in a ladder match sounds like complete insanity. And I'm very much looking forward to that match next week. So this was kind of a ho-hum episode of Lucha Underground. Good, but like nothing overly exciting. I have a feeling that that main event next week is going to be pretty damn exciting. So I'm looking forward to that. Let's crack into the mailbag here. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Rob wrote in with this concerning Katrina's new hairstyle on Lucha Underground, which I am a big fan of. He says, WWE 2K14 is the only video game where Oksana appeared as a playable character. While her run was largely uneventful, Oksana appeared alongside Katrina, this was back when she was Maxine, on the third season of NXT. Turns out Maxine pitched that character to WWE Creative originally as the black-haired seductress who would prey on Teddy Long in order to take over SmackDown. Instead, this was given to Oksana, who at the time had bleached hair and was more of a ditzy generic blonde character. Overnight, Oksana's hair was changed to the blacked out bangs look with the cat suit, and she was featured on the main roster instead of Maxine. Maxine's ideas were stolen from her, while Oksana would go on to break Naomi's face and share airtime with Teddy Long and Cesaro. They say talent always rises to the top, and I'm glad Katrina became a prominent character on Lucha Underground. Amen. I think things worked out pretty well for her. Joey from Canada. I just finished watching the entire Monday Night War series on WWE Network, and according to the final couple of episodes documenting the fall of WCW, the company lost $15 million in 1999 and lost over $60 million in 2000. Money WCW hemorrhaged during its final years is certainly the stuff of legend, but I'm just curious as to the how and why that happened. What specifically caused them to lose so much money, especially comparing 1999 to 2000 when their losses more than quadrupled in a year? It's mind-blowing to me. I can understand the loss of revenue due to a failing product creatively, but why so much gratuitous expense? Were they in debt? Was it all the guaranteed contracts and such that ultimately sank them? I'm not aware of there being any outstanding debt, or I would imagine that would have come up when WWE bought them out. But you've got all of those bloated guaranteed contracts. Okay, remember the Hogan one? We talked about this on the podcast. There was a Hulk Hogan contract that went back to like 1998 that got leaked, his old WCW contract. I mean, the things in that contract and the money that guy was being paid, Hogan alone. You know, now imagine there was a bunch of other contracts that guaranteed guys like Hall and Nash and Brett. Think of the millions of dollars that those guys were making. Goldberg, Sting, you know, DDP, who took a buyout to come to WWE, Booker T, who took a buyout to come to WWE. But a lot of those guys had very sweet guaranteed contracts making six, seven figures. You add all those up, you probably got your expense right there. Then, you know, ticket sales were down, pay-per-view buys tanked, you had the loss of ad revenue for the TV shows. That probably cost them a few million dollars alone that year. Factor in all the other, the lower card talent they had under contract that they never used, still being paid, but not being used, not even being flown out to the shows. I mean, you talk about gratuitous. They had Lanny Poffo under contract, okay? Macho Man got his brother a sweet deal with WCW in like 95. The genius, okay? Lanny Poffo was under contract for like 5 years to WCW. You know how many times they used him? None. Not a single time. I don't even think they ever flew him to any of the shows. Think about that. And he wasn't the only one. I know they had to start taping Thunder, I think after Nitro, because the expense of doing the tapings on different nights was too much. You factor in all the other stupid shit they did. Think of how many cars that Goldberg destroyed. Didn't Goldberg have like a couple of cars crushed into cubes? I mean, maybe they didn't actually destroy cars. Maybe they just took some debris and passed it off as one. But, you know, there was that one limo I know he put his fist through. That wasn't too bright. You know, the stuff like that. And they had, you know, the money I'm sure they had to pay Master P and his No Limit morons for that stupid angle they did. They brought James Brown in. James Brown, in the last year of WCW, I think it was in 2000, they brought James Brown in to make a cameo with Ernest the Cat Miller. You think he comes cheap? And what did that get them? It bring in new fans to get the mainstream exposure? No, it was a waste. Wasteful spending. WWE could have brought in James Brown for a one-shot if they really wanted to. But WWE could do that because they made $15 million in profit that year. It would have been $70 or $80 million were it not for the XFL. Vince couldn't help himself. Even he had to piss away millions of dollars that year. You know, but at least he could afford to do it. WCW couldn't afford to do it. So take everything I just mentioned, and I'm sure I'm forgetting some stuff. You know what? It's not that hard to think you can get up to $50, $60, $70 million. Nick from Germany. I came up with an idea I wanted to know your thoughts on. If Sasha Banks were to face Charlotte with Ric Flair in her corner at WrestleMania 32, what would you think about having Snoop Dogg in Sasha's corner? Snoop Dogg has been at WrestleMania before, and Sasha's cousin might be a fitting equalizer for Ric Flair. I think that's a great idea. I hadn't even thought of that. That's a great idea. The sight of Ric Flair throwing his jacket on the ground and going all crazy on Snoop Dogg. Hey, for that alone, That would be an amazing moment. That's a WrestleMania moment, if they could pull that one off. And I'm sure it would mean a lot to Sasha to have him out there. I mean, he's the one that used to get her in backstage when she was a kid to meet all the wrestlers. I hope it happens. Hassan from Atlanta. Me and a friend were talking about the Shield the other day, more specifically each of their title runs. My friend seems to think that they put the tag team title on Roman Reigns and not Dean Ambrose because she thinks Reigns and Rollins make a better team than Ambrose and Rollins would. I think they put the tag titles on Reigns just to mask how green he was at the time. Please help us settle this debate. Well, I think you're right on the money with that one. I mean, Roman Reigns was much better off in a team at the time. And also, you know, they put the U.S. title on Ambrose. So it really wouldn't have made any sense to put him in a tag team with Rollins. Reigns and Ambrose would have also been fine and make Rollins the U.S. champion. That could have worked. But I think they wanted Roman Reigns as part of the team. Michael, was the Brawl for All Jim Ross's idea or Vince Russo's? I saw a clip from his U shoot saying it was his idea. I believe it was Russo's idea. I believe so. I know Jim Cornette has claimed that it was, and I mean, look, it's Cornette talking about Russo, I know, but you know, he was working in the same company with Russo at the time, so he would know. I think JBL's also talked about Russo, you know, being the brains behind the whole Brawl for All thing. Jim Ross has always talked about what a stupid idea he thought it was. You know, but I've never heard him take credit or apologize for it, so I don't think he had anything to do with it. I know he wanted, you know, he was a big backer of Dr. Death, and Dr. Death, you know, he lost in the tournament and it killed his push and all that, but I don't think the actual tournament was the brainchild of Jim Ross. You know, he was the head of talent relations at the time, I think, right? That would have been 98. I think he was the head of talent relations. I'm sure he had to know guys were going to end up getting hurt. You think that's something he wanted to deal with? A whole bunch of talent injuries? I don't think so. Tyler in Salem, Oregon. After watching the end of Raw and seeing Roman Reigns bleeding, my mind started wandering in the thought of wrestlers I've never seen bloody. Seems like most of the top stars I can recall being busted open, except for Bret Hart. Do you ever recall a match where he bled? Because I cannot think of one. Well, I can think of two. WrestleMania 8. Match with Roddy Piper for the Intercontinental title, and the other one. And this is the one where I don't know that I've ever seen Bret Hart bleed as much as I did in this match. This was the In Your House match he had in 95 with the British Bulldog. He bled a gusher in that match. There was blood everywhere. There was blood on the mats outside the ring. There was blood on the canvas. When that match was over, it looked bad. It looked bad. So that had to be the worst I've ever seen him bloodied up. That was their first big match since their Wembley Stadium match at SummerSlam. Ryan, what do you think about a Hall of Fame induction for Todd Pettengill? Growing up with his hosting and commentary, I always found him a cornball of entertainment. Oh, he was corny, all right. He was definitely corny. You know what? I that's fine. I have no problem with him going in. The only thing I request, Sean Mooney has to go in first. Once Sean Mooney is in, then they can put Todd Pettengill in there. They should put him in there for those two Slammy Awards songs that he did. They when the Slammy Awards were an actual show in 96 and 97, they had Pettengill open up. I think both shows, he opened up with this, it was like a Broadway number, like this song, and he was trying to incorporate all the different wrestler names in there. It was actually really cool. So for those two songs alone, I would put him in the Hall of Fame. Although, I do have to say, he did give us Michael Cole. He was the one who got Michael Cole into WWE. So, on second thought, might have to rethink that one. Ross from Edmonton, Alberta. Buy or sell SummerSlam 1992 or SummerSlam 2002? Yeah, these very vague buy or sells, they're very hard to answer. I mean, are we saying buy or sell on in terms of the sheer size of the event? Because SummerSlam in 92 is one of the biggest they ever did. That may well still be the biggest legitimate crowd that they ever did. I think it was like 79,000. So that was a big show. But I'm going to assume that you are referring to the card, and I got to give the nod to SummerSlam 2002. It was just a much better show. I mean, SummerSlam 92, for all intents and purposes, it was a one-match show. You know, Savage and Warrior had a pretty good match, but, I mean, there was nothing overly memorable about it. Shawn Michaels and Rick Martel had a fun little match on the undercard. Everything else was, you know, pretty much crap. The main event was just an all-time classic. It's a one-match show. SummerSlam 02 had a bunch of good matches. You know, Shawn Michaels coming back against Triple H. They had a fantastic match. Rock and Brock, I love that match. They made a new star. I mean, Brock was already kind of a star, but they solidified it that night. Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio in the opener, that was a really fun match. I'm sure there's some others I'm forgetting. So yeah, SummerSlam 2002, I'm going to buy on that one and sell on 1992, sheerly for the card itself. I'm not talking about the crowd or anything like that, just on the matches. Brandon from Chicago, buy or sell on the better ring announcer, Gary Michael Capetta or Justin Roberts? I love both guys' style of ring announcing. I always felt that Gary, though, had more passion and drive in his voice, especially for a big main event match. What do you think? I can't believe this is a serious question. That's what I can't believe. Obviously, I'm going to buy on Capetta. I'm going to sell on Roberts. It still infuriates me the way that Justin Roberts used to announce John Cena's name. Like, I don't mind it when they trot Schimmel out there like they did last week, Tony Schimmel, to do the whole, you know, when Edge comes back, he'll do the whole rated R superstar thing. I actually laugh. I get a chuckle out of that. Justin Roberts, whenever he would announce John Cena, it would just, I would get so angry. And I just wasn't, I don't want to knock the guy. He was okay, but he was no Gary Michael Capetta, put it that way. Gary Michael Capetta is one of the greatest ring announcers of all time, although, you know, I would put Howard Finkel ahead of him. To me, Howard Finkel's number one. But honestly, you can't go wrong with either one of those guys. And you mentioned the passion in his voice for the big-time matches. It's sad, you know, we really don't have that anymore, and I miss that. I mean, you know, Eden, they have Eden Styles. Eden is a beautiful woman. She may be the most gorgeous, you know, female they have in the entire company. So I am a big Eden fan. But, you know, she's a pretty girl. So is Lillian. You know, Lillian's a pretty girl too, but they're no Michael Buffer. You know, they're no Michael Buffer or Howard Finkel or Bruce Buffer, you know, in UFC. Those guys get you pumped up. Both Buffer brothers, they'd get you pumped up for a main event. Although I can't criticize Lillian's botches without being fair and mentioning the one time Michael Buffer referred to Bret Hart as Bret Hitman Clark. That was a classic one. Or when they brought him in for the Royal Rumble in 2008, he announced Shawn Michaels as the Heartbreak Kid and then never mentioned his actual name. I guess he thought his wrestling name was the Heartbreak Kid. Because he said Heartbreak Kid and he left. That was it. And think about that. He got paid six figures. I would love to know what the exact dollar amount was. I've always heard like Michael Buffer would be brought in. Like in WCW, they would bring him in all the time. You could add that to the list of reasons why WCW lost so much money. They kept paying Michael Buffer to come in to do all their big shows all throughout the 90s. But I would love to know what they paid him. If it was $100,000, I've heard $250,000, I've heard $500,000. Whatever it was probably too much. But he was very good at what he did. I will say that. He's made so much money off that fucking let's get ready to rumble catchphrase. I got to hand it to the guy. I remember I was reading an article, I think it was in Forbes or Business Week one time. This fucking guy, he's made tens, maybe hundreds, I don't even know, but tens of millions of dollars off that catchphrase. So, hey, more power to him. We are counting down the 15 best matches in WCW history, one match per week, for 15 straight weeks leading up to the anniversary of the final Nitro, which is a month away now. Only about four more weeks to go. Last week, match number 10 in the countdown was Eddie Guerrero and Rey Mysterio, Halloween Havoc 97. This week, match number 11 from Wrestle War. May 17th, 1992, from the Jacksonville Memorial Coliseum in Jacksonville, Florida. Sting Squadron. Sting, Barry Windham, Ricky Steamboat, Nikita Koloff, and Dustin Rhodes against the Dangerous Alliance. Rick Rude, Arn Anderson, Stunning Steve Austin, Larry Zbysko, and Bobby Eaton in a War Games match. Probably the greatest War Games match that I have ever seen. And that includes the first one, back in 87. I did see that one. Actually, I watched that one about a month and a half ago. And the first one I reviewed in this countdown, Because this is the second War Games match in this countdown. The first one was the year before this one. That was pretty damn awesome, too. But I would give the edge to this one. Two rings, side by side, surrounded by one giant cage. Two men start for their respective teams. Then comes the coin toss. Whichever team wins, they then alternate one member every 2 minutes until everybody is in, and then it becomes submission or surrender. Or as they call it, the match beyond. Before then, no pinfalls, no submissions. Match can't end until everybody is in. If you want to know how loaded this match was, I was looking at the lineup here. Six WWE Hall of Famers, including Sting, who's going in soon. And I put Medusa in there, too. She was outside the cage with Paul Heyman. Really, it should be seven Hall of Famers with Rick Rude. He should already be in the Hall of Fame. There's no good reason for him not to be. Hopefully, they will correct that error in the very near future. I talked about the Dangerous Alliance on last week's podcast. They were awesome, but they did not last nearly as long as they probably should have. They really had one dominant year in WCW, and then they started to fall apart. They were feuding with Sting at the time. He was the world champion. Rick Rude had the U.S. title. Wyndham had just beaten Steve Austin to win the television title. And the two of them started the match. Now, if you remember in the War Games match from Wrestle War 91 that we talked about, Barry Wyndham was the heel. Brian Pillman busted him wide open about 2 minutes into the match. Here, Wyndham is the babyface, and he busts Austin open within the first 2 minutes of the match. So I thought that was kind of cool. By the way, before the match started, Heyman was outside the ring with everybody. He was planning strategy. Apparently he had stuff written down on paper like a football coach. These guys are running plays. I miss managers. So Wyndham ended up bleeding as well. So did Arn. I think almost everybody in the match, except maybe Ricky Steamboat and Larry Zbysko, ended up bloody. It looked like a crime scene in there by the end of this thing. This was a violent match. Not like CZW violent, but old school NWA violent. Medusa grabbed Heyman's giant cell phone, took her shoes off midway through the match, climbed up to the top of the cage. She dropped the phone into the cage. Arn Anderson caught it. He nailed Dustin Rhodes in the face with it. Sting, who was out there, he had busted up ribs thanks to Vader. He climbed up onto the top of the cage to chase Medusa away, so that was a fun visual. He chased her back down the side of the cage. Nikita Koloff entered last for Sting's team. Sting got in there second to last. Nikita was last. This was interesting. They sort of played up whether or not Nikita could be trusted. Sting was down in the corner at one point. Nikita reached down to pull him up. Sting looked skeptical. Then as they're talking, Arn Anderson and Larry Zbysko, you could see them in the background. They go to attack Sting from behind. Koloff shoves Sting out of the way, and he takes the bullet for him. I want to give WCW credit for some storyline continuity here because it's almost non-existent in wrestling today, or WWE at least. I definitely don't want to say there's no continuity in Lucha Underground. Ring of Honor, I think, probably is pretty good at that too. WWE is, generally speaking, absolutely awful at that kind of thing. So I want to give WCW credit for it here. The problem is neither one of the announcers, not Jim Ross, not Jesse Ventura, brought up the fact that it was exactly 1 year ago that Sting and Lex Luger wrestled the Steiners at that first Super Bowl, which is another match that was featured in this countdown. In fact, I think I talked about that match about 2 weeks ago, so it's still fresh in my mind. If you remember, in that match, Koloff ran down with a chain wrapped around his hand. Chain was intended for Lex Luger. Sting saw him coming. He shoved Luger out of the way. And Koloff hit Sting with the chain, which cost them the match. So here, they basically repeated the spot, but it was Koloff saving Sting. Nice little bit of continuity. But again, Jesse Ventura's on commentary going, "What? I don't understand. Why are Sting and Koloff beefing with each other? They're partners, aren't they?" That's what he said. And JR never pointed out any of what I just talked about to him. So I'm not even sure if he remembered that. So it's a nice memory on whoever booked that spot. Maybe it was just the two of them, but whoever it was never clued the announcers in on what was going on. Rude and Zbysko, they had been fucking around for a while with the top rope, trying to take it apart. It's almost like they were trying to undo it. They were trying to unscrew one of the steel beams. Eventually, they did get it off. The rope was still attached to it, but it looked like a giant wrench. It was this long steel beam. So anyway, Zbysko had it in his hand. He went to go hit Sting with it. Right? Bobby Eaton's got Sting hooked. He goes to hit Sting. Sting moves out of the way, and Zbyszko hits Eaton in the shoulder with it instead. Sting put Eaton in an armbar. It's just a standard armbar, standing up. Every wrestler uses in the first 60 seconds of every match. And Bobby Eaton gave up. He gave up in agony. A basic move like that, after 25 minutes of chaos and just mayhem, and the roof came off the place. Like, you would have thought, you know, Sting won the match with the Scorpion. Place went crazy. After the match, the rest of the Dangerous Alliance, they were yelling at Zbyszko. They were blaming him for the loss. A couple weeks later, Zbyszko ended up turning babyface and was, you know, fired from the Dangerous Alliance, and he turned babyface. And he didn't really do much after that. He retired. He became an announcer. He got very popular during the NWO days. He had a little feud going with Scott Hall. One of the biggest changes that took place around this time in WCW was that they hired Bill Watts to run the company. And by the next year, he was, you know, he was gone. There was a whole scandal. You could read about it online, but you know, he had given an interview. I think I want to say it was with the Pro Wrestling Torch. I think it might have been with Wade Keller, and it was kind of fucked up. I mean, some of the things he said in the interview, to be honest with you, racially speaking, were fucked up. You could say, oh well, he was a product of his time. It doesn't matter. It was still fucked up what he said. But what was really messed up about it was he gave that interview to the Torch like 2 years before WCW hired him. And I don't exactly remember what happened, if it was published but nobody really remembered it and somebody brought it to someone's attention. I vaguely remember it might have been Mark Madden who mailed a copy of it to Hank Aaron, who was working for Turner Broadcasting at the time. I think that might have been what happened. I think Mark Madden snitched him out, sent Hank Aaron a copy of the interview. Again, there were some comments that Watts made that were inappropriate and really made Hank Aaron very upset, and he brought it to the attention of the powers that be. And, you know, that was pretty much the end of Bill Watts in WCW. But, you know, he got taken to task for comments he made in an interview that he gave long before WCW ever hired him. So that was the reason why he ended up leaving the company. And I'm not even passing judgment whether it was right or wrong for that to happen. I mean, you could look at the Hulk Hogan situation. Hulk Hogan got shit-canned from WWE for making, you know, stupid racial comments in a sex tape that was done 6, 7, 8 years earlier. You know, stuff like that comes out, though, and, you know, you got to answer for it. And it was just it was a bad situation for WCW. They had to make a move, and they did. And so that was the end of Watts' run there. But as far as this match is concerned, this match was madness, right? Isn't that what they say in that 300 movie with the Spartans, right? This is Sparta. This is War Games. It's a great match. Watch it. Watch this match. It's WrestleWar 92 on the WWE Network. Well worth going out of your way to see. Follow me on Twitter, at Solomonster. You can vote in our Raw poll every Monday night as soon as the show goes off the air. I also want to give a shout-out this Friday night, March 4th, 7:30 p.m., the American Legion Hall, 5601 Avenue N in Brooklyn, New York. East Coast Pro Wrestling and New Generation Wrestling are having a show. The Nasty Boys, Greg Valentine, Brutus the Barber, Beefcake are all on the card. Plus, they're having a ladder match and a 20-man battle royal. There's a lot of stuff going on. Tickets are $20. If you are in or around the New York area, you should check it out. I may try to make it, but that's my first day in court, and I have no idea when I'll be done or what the hell I'm doing afterwards. I mentioned last week I was headed for jury duty this past week. Well, I did get picked for a jury. I have to serve for 4 months, put it that way. Minimum 4 months. Thankfully, it's just once a week. Could have been a lot worse. But you can imagine with WrestleMania coming up what was going through my head when I heard the judge call my name out. Should be an interesting experience, though. I've never done this before. Yeah, they don't play around, either. You know, as soon as you walk into the courthouse, they take away your cell phone. No cell phones, no laptops allowed. They say, bring a book. Bring a book in case you have gaps in the schedule and you're bored. You know, like between witnesses or whatever. Or you can sew. That's the other thing they said. If you want to bring a sewing kit. Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, that'll happen. Like, who am I, Betsy Ross? I'm going to sit there sewing? I don't think so. Anyway, We will be back next weekend with a brand new podcast. That'll be episode 428. So until then, be well, stay safe. Thank you all for your continued support. Please continue to show us love on iTunes and Stitcher. And we will see you right back here again next weekend. So until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Sala Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan's WCW contract splattered all over the internet. He got a $2 million signing bonus, 25% of the ticket revenue from all Nitro and Thunder events that he appeared on. He also got $20,000 per month for as long as he was part of the NWO, 50% of the profits from any Hulk Hogan merchandise that was sold, and a minimum $675,000 for any pay-per-view he appeared on. You know what I say? I say good for him. If I could get that kind of deal for myself, if somebody wanted me that badly, they were that stupid, then great. Always ask for what you feel you're worth. Your boss should have the guts to say no. WCW wanted to blow this guy so badly, they put a towel down on the floor so they wouldn't get rug burned.
Sala Monster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Sala Monster sounds off. Available at thesalamonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Sala Monster sound off.